Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 69 of the Peak of Serenity podcast. I am one of your hosts, Emelson, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, Anomaly.
Hello.
And today, we have a couple different things we're going to talk about, but most of our time is going to be spent talking about the new Monk Covenant legendaries that finally landed on the PTR.
But the changes, too, right? Who cares about legendaries? They're awful. The Mistweaver ones were meta.
Mistweaver doesn't exist.
Fuck. Still, god damn it. Oh, yes. No, god, there are legendaries. That's true. There are
legendaries.
Tons of changes, though. I'm excited.
I used one of them in raid testing this week.
Oh, very nice. Well, luckily, we can have a little chit-chat about that, too. But cool. How was your week, though? Otherwise, did you guys... We're on a new day. We're at a new time. It's very weird. It's like light outside. but how was your raid week this week?
Only half over. So had a couple people out that we weren't planning to have out on Friday, which made Denathrius interesting. So we had a very disappointing 3% wipe where the melee realm forgot to lust.
Oh, no. That's not good.
So that was kind of sad. So we haven't quite got Denathrius back down, but it should be that easy tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. How about you guys?
I played.
Doing your one night clear?
Yeah, we're still doing our one night thing. Clear. We got Denathrius down pretty easy, and then did the Enerva wing. So did just Huntsman, Hungering, and Enerva before calling it quits. But yeah, I got to play my monk basically for that wing, which was fun.
Nice. I've been
raided on my monk literally since council progression, so like 2 or 3 months ago. So that was good. And then yeah, we got pretty easy on Denathrius, but no real struggles. So it was an easy raid week, I'll say. So now just getting set up for next week, I think.
So speaking of Denathrius, though, one of the things from that happened this week is, while I had listed this as a Sire Denathrius nerf, I think that's too strong of a term. It's more of like a quality of life change.
Yeah.
And what it is that when you get gripped by Hand of Destruction on Sire Denathrius, you are briefly granted protection from Crescendo, which is the thing that knocks you off the platform. So this just means that the annoying wipes to like an ad dying 5 seconds before the Hand of Destruction goes off and everybody gets gripped into the puddles and gets yeeted off the platform in all directions, no longer going to happen. So it will save guilds that are progressing it now a few wipes, but it's not the nerf that some people are asking for on Denathrius.
Yeah, I mean, we killed it, I think, before this went in, this week at least, but does it grant, like, immunity, is it just while you're in the air flying and landing, or is there, like, a couple of seconds? Yeah.
We have had that, like, deaths to that overlap before. We did not have any this week, so
gotcha.
Far.
Yeah, so, it'd be interesting to see if it's, like, a slightly, like, you land and you have, like, maybe a couple seconds of immunity still, because, like, if it's just while you're in the air, it doesn't really save you from the whole... landing right. As Crescendo lands, right? With nothing you can do. So
there's not a buff or anything that I saw.
Okay.
So I'm not exactly sure how that works.
Yeah. It's just like a hidden aura.
Yeah, maybe.
Interesting. Yeah, those were really the only changes. So
there wasn't you mentioned when Mistweaver got their auto attack hotfix.
Yeah.
That there is rumors of a similar thing for Enhancement Shaman, and they got their version of that auto attack hotfix this week.
Gotcha. Yeah, the Mistweaver one isn't fully, it's not 100% just yet.
Oh, it isn't?
Yeah, there's still some wonkiness with it, but yeah, it'll slowly but surely, I think they're gonna figure that one out for sure. So so cool. So yeah, so that is at least the Sire PvE nerfs. The other thing that happened this week is something you had called a couple weeks ago, right? Which was they finally nerfed Cardboard Assassin. So if you guys weren't aware, Cardboard Assassin is a Cataclysm engineering item, I believe, which essentially you can place on the ground. it'll taunt, you know, enemies around you, basically sort of to help you get away. But people are using it in high mythic plus keys to essentially taunt off of tanks and give tanks a little bit of breathing room to like get out of the way or maybe to do some weird pulls and things like that. So ended up nerfing the heck out of it. And it currently just gets one shot in mythic plus essentially.
So they, I'm going to pull up the mod changes real quick, because what they did is they reduced its level to 35 from 60. It reduced its health in a corresponding fashion. So now it's got under 2k health. It used to have almost 12k health.
Mm-hmm.
So the big thing is that previously Cardboard Assassin could dodge and all that thing. So like not every attack would hit it. Now every attack is going to hit it because it's 25 levels or more underneath what the trash is.
Right.
And because it's only got 2k health, the first thing that hits it is going to kill it.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be subject to crushing blows, I believe, at that point. So, I mean, even if it was a fairly weak mob that hit it, it's still going to get one shot. So,
yeah, I do appreciate this note that Squishy put in this post that the Cardboard Assassin has been under some controversy, noting that tank power is so weak at the moment that it needs to be supplemented with a profession item from several expansions ago.
That's funny.
Cardboard Assassin, a little bit too good at what it did. It was like a super treant that everybody could use.
Yeah.
But also, he's right.
That is true. That is true. So that's been nerfed. I think you said you called it a couple weeks ago. So yeah, no more Cardboard Assassin. It'll be used sort of in, you know, until 9.1. This is a 9.1 change. So it's up on PTR now and it'll go into sort of effect in the live game once 9.1 gets released. So.
So this does mean that this change will not affect the Great Push tournament that happens at the end of the month.
Right, yeah. Be able to use it there for sure. And they added it on the vendor, so you'll be able to grab it easily. Next up, Blizzard released a little bit more information, sort of corresponding with the Morgan Day interview last week, but in this week's PTR, they released more details around the Shards of Domination, which is sort of the new gem system that is on gear from the Sanctum of Domination. So confusing. So this is basically, we've talked about this a little bit, right? They've added sockets, specific sockets on gear that drops from Sanctum, and those sockets can be socketed with particular gems. They basically follow the DK tree. So there's blood gems, unholy gems, and frost gems. And if you equip three gems of the same type, you gain a bonus based on which school you sort of equip three from.
Old meta gems from the Burning Crusade.
There's also only five gem slots, so you'll basically only be able to have one quote-unquote right. Set bonus or gem bonus. So they released that, some more details there. They basically released pretty much, it looks like, a large number of gems. What I found interesting is they basically broke down each of the three schools. So, you know, blood, unholy, and frost has offensive healing and tertiary gems in each one. So like blood has blood offensive gems and blood has blood healing gems, and then there's blood tertiary gems, and then unholy has the same sort of construct. So I guess the idea is you'll equip, you know, one of each type of gem within each school and then sort of pick the best two from the other schools, right?
Yeah, except that there's this really interesting thing where frost doesn't have tertiary, it's got a defensive gem.
Yeah, which is,
that's the outlier. So blood has leech as its tertiary, which makes sense. Unholy yep. has speed, which might seem weird, but if you remember the old unholy aura that DKs had in Wrath and I guess Kata in Mop, it gave them good speed. So that's where that speed comes from.
Gotcha.
But frost does not have a tertiary. I was looking at it actually just now. I'm really like, oh, this one must be the avoidance gem. There's not an avoidance gem. It is instead that while you're standing still, you gain an absorb up to a cap that lasts for, you know, until it gets consumed. So the numbers on these are still very much like there's a bunch of zeros in these. Like the blood tertiary gem says your leech is increased by zero for each rank.
Yeah.
So it is a little bit too early to be talking too much about the balance of these. There are some that look pretty powerful, though. And it is important to note that the 3-set bonus only applies while you're in the Maw, including the new raid.
Yep.
Or Torghast.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how sort of these end up mathing out. Like the blood one is definitely your like leech one, which will be might be good, but it seems like frost at least currently looks probably one of the better of the three, at least from my like quick glance at this stuff. So
yeah, I would say that actually I don't know, because the frost one has this thing, your damage is increased by 8% for 20 seconds after attacking an enemy you have not yet damaged. So on a fight like Stone Legion Generals, it would be exceptional because there's new adds all the time. On a fight like Sludge Fist, it would be awful because for the first 20 seconds, you would get that damage increase and then nothing for the rest of the fight.
That's true. I guess Frost healing, like their absorb one requires you to stand still, which isn't always...
Right, which is probably not as bad as it sounds, because there's a lot of, like, there are conduit traits, or not conduit, soulbind traits. Mm-hmm. That have that same while you're standing still clause, and they're pretty forgiving on like if you stand still for a bit and then have to make a move and then start standing still again, you can still get most of the effect of them.
Right.
So it's probably still like fine. It's really a question of numbers, because then there's things like the unholy offensive one, dealing damage to a target increases your damage done to the target stacking a certain number of times. And that one is probably the one that most people are going to start using. But it's also going to depend on how powerful these 3-set bonuses are.
That's true.
Which someone pointed out to me that the Unholy 3-set bonus is literally part of the proc effect from Shadowmourne.
Yeah.
Which is cool callback. Also leads me to think it's probably going to be one of the more powerful ones.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how these end up playing out. I mean, it's just another sort of system they put on top of everything. So I think one thing that's going to probably hurt people is how these gems are acquired. Ooh. So if they're drops in a raid, you can get kind of screwed, or like, I don't know how they'll end up implementing how you, I guess, obtain the gems, but...
The Wowhead post says these sockets naturally drop in the Sanctum of Domination. Oh, sockets do. It doesn't say that the gems do.
Yeah.
So the upgrading of gems happens with a currency, kind of like upgrading essences in Eternal Palace.
Gotcha.
But it doesn't say anything about the acquisition of the first rank of them.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see how that sort of ends up playing out, ends up working. So cool. So that's sort of the shards, a little bit more detail there, fleshing out the system a little bit. So hopefully next week we'll see more. And then the only other final real quick topic from last week is Blizzard basically has added a way to exchange keystones. So essentially what will happen is if you complete a keystone before the timer ends, you will, at the end of that dungeon, you'll be able to basically make a one-time trade of your keystone to basically trade whatever dungeon it spawned as. It looks like that way. So you'll be able to take your keystone, turn it in, and be able to get a different dungeon in terms of like what you want to select. So
it does have to, like, it's limited in that if you have like a plus 15 keystone, you have to complete at least a plus 15 dungeon in order to have the option to trade. So you can't like do a plus 2 and then at the end trade your 15 for a different 15.
Right.
If you do a 15, then you can trade your 15 for another one.
Yeah.
There's also a return of the key deletion thing, kind of, where if you don't have a key in your bags and you have completed a mythic plus dungeon ever from this expansion, you can talk to this same NPC in Orbos next to the Great Vault, and he will give you a keystone. Yeah. And that does two things. One, you can delete your key and talk to him and he'll give you a new key. Two, you can, if you are, like, if you missed a week and you don't have a keystone for this week, you can talk to him and you can get a key.
Yeah.
Which actually I think is very good, because if you're a DPS, the easiest way to get in a key is to run your own key.
Exactly.
And if you miss a week and then you don't have a keystone, then you got to sit in LFG for 45 minutes trying to find a group.
Yeah, it takes forever at that point. So, but no, yeah, this will be a good change. I guess the other thing too is that if you're the person who is the one who put in your key, you actually can't change it. So that's the interesting thing, because like if you have to basically time the key for this individual, this NPC to spawn to do the trade, and then because you time the key, your keystone is now one level above, and you won't be able to trade it inside that dungeon. So that'll be one thing to keep in mind, is that I think it's basically more made for like more pre-made groups or just groups of individuals who run keys together. And it's like, man, we all got, you know, I think they use the example, we all got sanguine depths.
Yeah, right? This is a fix for it's the end of the week, we want to do keys, all we have is sanguine depths and spires of ascension or the other pain or whatever dungeon you hate. But
yeah,
especially sanguine depths, let's be honest.
Place is awful, dude. Yeah. No, yeah, so it's definitely a good change. At least an interesting way to do it. And we'll see how it plays out. So
yeah. I plugged a 14 sanguine depths on my like warrior this week. It actually went way better than I was expecting for a tyrannical sanguine depths to go.
Interesting. I have not been in sanguine depths since I got Keystone Master.
Yeah. Good choice, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
Good choice.
I am not a fan. So yeah, so that is sort of the week in review. I don't think there's not too much else that I think we wanted to highlight. Just a couple of items there. So I think now we get to sort of move into the meat of the conversation, you could say, which is, of course, they finally, when I say they, Blizzard finally released the Monk Legendaries, the Covenant Legendaries for Monks. So I figure, I don't know how, Alison, you want to sort of maybe go through each one of these just one at a time?
Yeah, let's go through them one by one. I've got them pulled up on stream right now.
Cool.
So no one can see our beautiful faces, but they can read the text on these.
Love it.
So let's, I guess, just go top to bottom in this list. So we've got the Necrolord one first. Your abilities have a low chance to cast Bone Dust Brew at your target's location.
Mm-hmm.
This one is really interesting for Brewmaster, because Bone Dust Brew gives you extra brew reduction, which then applies to Bone Dust Brew. So it has potential in having that kind of feedback loop.
Mm-hmm.
But the ability itself is not so powerful that you would run it over Charred Passions or Stormstout's Last Keg.
Right.
If that doesn't let you do silly things with brew uptime, like if it lets you do things like have way more celestial brews, then you probably would have a strong contender as like a balanced defensive offensive legendary, or it's not the best offensive legendary, but also doesn't sacrifice as much as running Mighty Poor for a defensive legendary.
I mean, it was it seems like it's somewhat good. Like if we look at it for even Mistweaver 2, it is a full Bone Dust Brew cast. So it triggers all the same things a typical Bone Dust Brew cast triggers, as the same range in terms of where it triggers off of your target. So it's 8 yards around whatever target triggers it on. It'll proc M&E's sort of lead by example. So you'll get the primary stat increase, whatever procs. And I think the proc rate is about 1.25, so it's 1.25 procs per minute. So essentially it's you know, roughly an extra 75% bone dust brews right over the course of a fight, which is good. I think the biggest thing that I see is that it procs from anything, so like healing events, damage events, auto attacks. I couldn't nail this down when I was doing my testing on it, but I believe it'll even proc from like auras and potentially some buffs the way they're coded being applied to you.
I suspect it'll proc from Gift of the Ox orbs for Brewmaster as well.
Yeah.
Which basically is just going to like dump it on top of you, which is not the worst thing in the world for a Brewmaster, but.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you get into some weird range things too. Cause I was wondering if like it procced off bosses that have larger hitboxes and you're away from them, if it procs right at the center,
a bunch
of melee folks will be out of range of it. Right. Cause it's only 8 yards. So there's a lot of things that sort of, I think, go against this legendary being sort of RNG like this. But if it hits, it can be very good. Right. Like
I'm thinking of something like, if your rate is stacked, right?
Yes.
and you get it proc off of a renewing mist just on someone in the stack, and you just get an extra bone dust brew in your entire raid.
Yeah, it'll be very, very strong in those situations. So yeah, so if it hits, if it lines up right, it can be like really good. I think the problem is the timing that, or like playing to that,
right,
and giving up, you know, the other legendaries that we do have, right? I don't think it's worth it in that regard. But it was nice that, like, I was expecting it to be like a weird bone dust brew where it, like, didn't proc covenant ability, or sorry, conduit,
right,
or soulbind abilities.
This is a lot like we talked about the Kyrian paladin legendary with, right, divine toll that gives you the extra divine toll casted. That one does actually proc things like Pelagos.
Yeah.
So it seems like they are being consistent with that. When you get this extra cast of an ability, it is proccing all of your soulbind stuff, which does change the numbers. Like,
right,
some of these by themselves don't look the greatest, but when you factor in an extra many proc and things like that, even in the cases where you overheal a bunch with your extra bone dust brew, you're still getting that extra int bonus, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. So it's got, again, potentially be strong if you get lucky. If you're not lucky, or in the case of like the general use of it, you know, it's probably just something that you might equip if we can never equip two legendaries. Like it ends up being, yeah, potentially a solid second, at least for Mistweaver. I talked to a couple of Windwalkers about it. I don't know of any Necrolord Windwalkers anyway. So it's like one of those things where it's like,
really?
Yeah, it's like, I don't even know if they'll use this, even if they were.
It's Kyrian, you know, the whole way, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And I don't think that really changes anything.
No, I don't think this legendary is stronger to even shift anybody to or off of, you know, whatever covenant they're currently picking. So,
that brings us actually pretty nicely into what the Kyrian legendary is, mm-hmm, which is very simple. Weapons of Order calls forth your Celestial to assist you for 12 seconds.
Yep.
So for Brewmasters, that is Nia Zhao. For Windwalkers, that is Zuan. And for Mistweavers, that is Yuvon.
Or Chi-Gi, just depending on if you take the Chi-Gi talent.
Or Chi-Gi, okay.
Yeah.
This one is super, super interesting. So Windwalkers, that I've heard from, it's probably if/when we get our second legendary slot, this is going to be the go-to in combination with Invoker's Delight.
Mm-hmm.
Because Invoker's Delight being 33% haste when you summon your Celestial is obviously very strong in combination with this. But it's not actually stronger than Invoker's Delight for them, from what, yeah, I understand. Having an extra... Zuin's already a 2-minute cooldown. It lines up with Weapons of Order already. So you can actually just already plan on having Bloodlust levels of haste, Zuin, Weapons of Order, all up at the same time every 2 minutes, along with, right, both your SCF charges, or one of them.
Right.
So, like, this doesn't seem like it's going to displace Invoker's Delight for Windwalkers.
Yeah. Yeah. And even for Mistweavers, having the extra Celestial is nice. It lets us, because ours don't line up as nicely as this from a 2-minute perspective. So, like, Yulon and Chi-Gi are their 3-minute cooldowns. So there is a little bit of an offset there. And also, the other issue is that, like, if you're utilizing Yulon over top of something like Weapons of Order, you also have to factor in, like, Manatee to sort of make sure you're saving some of your mana as you're casting things. So for this, it essentially just adds, for Mystery, adds an additional sort of cooldown of your Celestial on top of using Weapons of Order. So decoupling it, you know, can be something you do.
Yeah.
It'll probably be more impactful if you're running Chi-Gi than Yulon. Since the healing from Chi-Gi is essentially gusts of mist healing. So, you know, the mastery increase from weapons will increase the healing of Chi-Gi. So you get this sort of 12 seconds of increased melee healing every time you trigger Weapons of Order. So it is a power increase for sure. However, it is only 12 seconds. It's a short duration, and there's again just other legendaries that are better. I mean, just to put it bluntly, it's not a game changer in terms of what you can do. And I would say that I think it's a little too early to tell, but if we sort of think about this idea where if you do get to equip a second legendary, I don't actually even think this ends up being a second legendary candidate. But we'll see. I mean, it's just it's a nice little boost whenever you use Weapons of Order, and you don't have to sort of hold weapons to sync up with Chi-Gi or vice versa, right? So
for Brewmaster, it's really interesting. And it's actually going to be impossible to tell from Sims whether it is good or not, because so much of Invoke Niazao's value is tied up in how much damage you're taking and what the patterns of damage you're taking are. So if there's another situation, like I was actually talking about before the show, how many physical damage damage taken amplifications there are on the tank debuffs this tier in Sanctum of Domination. And with those, it just like all of the sim math just has to go out the window, because what this legendary basically says is when you press Weapons of Order, you get two stomps. And how good those stomps are depends on how good your purifies are. Mm-hmm. And there's actually, it's kind of nice that, Invoke Niazao doesn't exactly line up with Weapons of Order. It's a 3-minute cooldown. We have a conduit that gives us cooldown reduction on it. In practice, you can usually get it to about 2 minutes and 15 seconds, which actually is pretty convenient. It it's going to still desync, but it does mean that we don't have to worry about trying to line them up necessarily. We're going to press Weapons of Order. We're going to have our first Niazao, and then we could press Invoke Niazao once that one expires and just continue with the damage. But again, it's going to depend so heavily on whether you can effectively use a total of 37 seconds of Invoke Niazao that we're not going to be able to tell how good this is without actual testing on raid bosses.
Gotcha. So. Gotcha. Well, at least, is this potentially it sounds like if the timings are right, this is a potential candidate to take over Charred Passions, or?
Yeah. It really depends. I expect this to be the pad legendary. If nothing else, all the top parsers are going to use this on most fights, because they are going to do degenerate things to just take loads of extra damage and translate those two extra stomps. Like, it's not unheard of right now to get a stomp for 50k damage.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So if you, three times over the fight, get two extra stomps, that's a lot of damage.
Yeah. Interesting. Cool. I mean, it sounds like that's, I'm all for padding. It makes the fights go a little bit quicker, right? So...
yeah, it's just a question. Like, I don't think this is going to be a progression legendary. I still think that it's going to be Storm Stout's last keg. And I don't see that the Kyrian legendary changing that at all.
Gotcha. Cool. I guess next up, anything else on the on-called arms?
Yeah.
Cool. So next up, we have the Night Fae legendary, which is Phalene Harmony. Your abilities... chance to reset Phalene Stomp is doubled. And then enemies and allies hit by Phalene Stomp are affected by Fae exposure, increasing your damage and healing against them by 8% for 10 seconds. So basically changes, what is it? It's an 8% chance to reset baseline. Yeah, so it's good. Yeah. Go to 16, which is, seems great. And then enemies hit also gain an 8% increase to either damage or healing. Sorry, enemies and allies. For Mistweavers, and I don't know if you've sort of gamed this, but there was already a fairly easy way to reset Phalene Stomp if you wanted, which was lining it up with Chi Burst and hitting Chi Burst through the group or raid, right? Because every time Chi Burst hits somebody, that's technically a cast event. So you're able to basically generate a ton of cast events and almost guarantee a reset at that point. So without that, I think it's just sort of the one thing that I've never liked about at least Phalene Stomp is just that it's very positional, right? So to keep the reset chance going, you kind of have to stand in a certain spot. So
it really, really suffers from fights that have unpredictable movement.
Yeah.
If you're looking at something like Sludge Fist, which is very predictable, you always know where you're going to stand next. You can play around it and be like, okay, I'm going to point my Phalene Stomp in this direction so that after we do the move, I'm still standing in it.
Right.
And that's great. But then there's stuff like we were testing Remnant of Ner'zhul this week, and it has some unpredictable movement in it. You don't know where you're going to go. And that means that if you press Feyline Stomp and then you have to move, like you either like sit on your Feyline Stomp, sometimes losing casts, not just potential casts, but guaranteed casts.
Yeah.
Or you use it and you hope that the direction you move lines up with the way you face your Feyline Stomp.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so that's sort of one of the struggles. The other struggle, at least for me too, was it disappears very quickly for not you. So like anybody who sees your Feyline Stomp, sometimes it disappears, I think after like 2 or 3 seconds. It doesn't have sort of the aura linger that like an Ashen Hollow does nowadays, where you can sort of see Ashen for a little bit longer, even if it's not yours, just at a lower intensity. So that's sort of annoying, trying to get your tank or whoever to sort of position things, stay in it. And then, yeah, so I mean, other than that, the legendary itself's not too, I mean, I don't think it's going to ever, in this iteration of it, just 8% increased damage and healing for 10 seconds doesn't seem like enough to push it, you know.
So for reference, previously, outside of Chi Burst shenanigans, you would be looking at, on average, a 15-second cooldown for Feyline Stomp. Sometimes you would never get a reset in the cast, sometimes it would reset the first GCD after you cast it, but on average you would get about 50% cooldown reduction on it from that reset chance.
Right.
With the doubled proc chance, or the doubled reset chance, that goes down to about 11 seconds based on math by Mythy. So that means that you could in theory have almost 90% uptime on that buff. In practice, it does suffer pretty heavily from that movement. So it really is going to be fight dependent. However, at least for Brewmaster, it's very attractive because the Night Phase Soulbinds are the best in the game. Like, just straight up, they are the best in the game right now. Even after the new traits that were added in 9.1, they are still the best in the game. So having this Night Phase Legendary that's potentially very good, pretty attractive on AoE in a way that Charred Passions isn't. And with Chi Burst shenanigans, I gotta figure out how to sim that, because if like we can have Chi Burst in sims and see how the reset chance looks like with that, that might change things as well, give us better uptime on the buff. Because like just a straight 8% damage amp by itself is competitive with Charred Passions.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So if we had that up 100% of the time, that would be competitive. The extra casts, though, have the potential to push it over the top, especially when you include the Night Phase Soulbinds versus the Kyrian ones. However, that does kind of omit the fact that you can totally just use Charred Passions as a Night Phase anyway. So if the Night Phase Soulbinds are better to the point that it doesn't matter, then you can just play Charred Passions or Stormstout's Last Keg as a Night Fae and be fine. However, I will say, one of the big determinants for Covenant strength in Brewmaster land is how well they interact with Invoke Niazhau. It really, really all comes down to Stomp.
if you can choose Stomp, it's good.
And that's one of the reasons that Venthyr is pretty bad for Brewmaster, is there's no interaction there. It doesn't do anything to affect your Stomp damage. In 9.0, Kyrian Weapons of Order increases stomp damage on the target. And because it's a cooldown, you can actually guarantee it lines up the way you want, which is nice. Bone Dust Brew can copy the stomp casts. So that effectively gives you a damage amp on average. But then Night Fae had like this minor interaction, which is that it increased your stagger for like 8 seconds after you cast it. So that would kind of let you get a little bit of extra stomp damage, but it wasn't really a lot. Adding that extra 8% damage taken on top, you should be able to pretty reliably line up with Invoke Niazhau anyway, because the cooldown is so short, means that that might be a big deal.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I didn't thought about that. Yeah, I mean, I think... Yeah, I wonder if for Mistweaver, if we got the cooldown low enough, just having... The problem with Mistweaver, though, is that we would want the healing amp, right, across the raid. So, if, like, anytime the raid spreads out, anytime the raid can't be hit by it, it just...
Yeah.
It becomes less attractive, right? So, it's probably it's less RNG than, like, the Necrolord legendary, right?
Yeah.
In terms of like where you're gonna see the amp. But I mean, the problem is if like it's a fully spread fight and you're only hitting maybe three or four people, you know, it's not gonna be better than Ancient Teachings at all. So for sure. So yeah, I mean, I guess for Windwalker, I mean, I guess Night Phase decent for them. I have no idea, I'll be completely honest.
Last I knew, it was not even close because of how good Weapons of Order is for Windwalker.
Gotcha. Yeah. That's what I figured is that, yeah, Weapons is just hands down miles ahead of everything else. So
yeah. And then there's the Venthyr one. I almost don't even want to talk about it, but we need to. So Fallen Order summons one additional adept that relates to your spec for 24 seconds. While you have an active adept, your abilities that critically hit reduce the cooldown of Fallen Order by 3 seconds. I have not done any testing on this yet to know that, for example, what happens if you press Spinning Crane Kick? Does each tick give you a 3 second cooldown reduction on it? I don't think that there's any number there that they can put outside of just basically resetting the cooldown that makes Venthyr good enough.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I did a little bit of testing with this. We looked at it too. I think some of the Windwalkers actually did some testing on this too with like multiple mobs and things like that. The way the cooldown reduction works is essentially it is tick based. So it's
okay.
Like when a spell, it's like one tick of the spell gives you at least one instance of the cooldown reduction.
Keepers work on this too?
That I don't know that off the top of my head.
Okay.
But I know what it's sort of any crit, and the actual timing is about 27 seconds because the mirror sort of summons them over a course of a number of seconds. So you get about 27 seconds of this reduction, and it's any ability as it crits. So from like a misweaver perspective, it would be any sort of hot ticks would trigger the reduction. So I mean, you could potentially move Fallen Order, you know, get upwards of like 60 seconds from reduction perspective.
Okay. That's pretty compelling as a legendary, but because Fallen Order is such an anemic cooldown as it is, and I have to say, like, I wish this just said that you get an extra tiger adept instead of an extra ox, crane, or tiger adept.
Yeah,
because nobody wants ox adepts. Like, I don't know about the crane ones, like if Mistweavers want those or not.
Yeah,
but nobody wants the ox ones. Just give us the tiger ones. They do more damage.
Yeah.
So Peo is asking in chat. So a couple things. First off, he says it's a travesty that it's not called Backstreets Back, because the colloquial name for this spell is the Backstreet Boys.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. That's fair.
So there's that. But also, apparently the spell data has a 3/4 second internal cooldown on the cooldown reduction effect.
Gotcha. Yeah, that might be the case. To be fair, I did not time it when I was doing my testing. So
it's one of the things where it's very unlikely to actually come up in practice, because like if you take Spinning Crane Kick, you would need to like get multiple crits like back to back on ticks in order for it to matter. But if it's spaced out where like your first tick and then your third tick crit, you're probably actually just not going to hit the ICD.
Yeah. So if the ICD is 0.75, then I mean, you're looking at, what is that? About 30-ish events, a little bit more than 30 events that you could potentially crit if you crit every time. So
Lincoln, I will not be trying the Venthyr legendary in raid testing. I might be trying the Necrolord one next week. But I will not be trying the Venthyr one.
Yeah. I mean, I think the interesting thing is, like, I don't even know how, even if you pushed the Venthyr cooldown as low as you could, I don't know if it ends up being, for Windwalker, probably not better, you know, not going to be better at all. Even for Mistweavers, you know, I think there's too much, again, RNG in terms of the power here. And even, would you even need a cooldown every, you know, minute and a half if you could push it that low? And then it sounds like for a Brewmaster, it offers very little interaction with the rest of your kit, and it's just maybe more damage. So,
So with the internal cooldown that Peo listed, the maximum cooldown reduction is 108 seconds, which is just shy of 2 minutes off the cooldown, which is a lot. It's a 3 minute cooldown, so that is a lot of cooldown reduction. But you have to crit a lot. You have to crit every 3/4 seconds for the entire time that Fallen Order is up for that to happen, which requires either AoE or an insane level of crit.
Which I don't, I mean, it's cool that you could get it to like a, you know, minute and a half, minute 15 in terms of like the cooldown, but I don't think you still play it regardless. I just think Venthyr in general has to be better as an ability, not even the legendary.
And the Soulbind for Brewmaster, the Soulbinds are not great. Like General Draven has very good defensive traits. There's nothing on the level of what Night Fae or Kyrian offers in terms of damage. Mm-hmm. So you don't get the choice with Venthyr of like, do I want to go the defensive Soulbind or the offensive Soulbind? There's just only a defensive Soulbind and the other two are bad.
That's fair. So I mean, it'll be. I just don't think it gets played just because the ability is bad. So I don't think they could really do anything, you know, unless it was like you summon 12 more adepts and they last for 60 seconds. You know, maybe at that point you see it played.
The ability just needs a redesign. Because as it is, it doesn't set. So like when I hit a cooldown in raid, and my perspective on this has changed as I've, you know, started doing strats and comps and things like that for our raid. Mm-hmm. When I hit a cooldown in raid, I don't care about the average damage, right? I don't care about the average throughput over time. Something like Fire Mage is a great example of where average like damage over the course of the fight is actually fairly irrelevant. Because as long as combustion is basically kill the target, you're going to bring a Fire Mage over one of the other ones because you can just delete a priority add with it.
Yep.
And so when I hit a cooldown, that's what I want to have. I want to have the ability to put a lot of damage into a specific target using that cooldown. And Falling Order doesn't do that. It's random. It's spread out over the long period of time. It doesn't interact with any of our kit in interesting ways. The variance, even in just the like average amount of damage you get from it, is pretty high because you can end up getting no Tiger Adepts and all Crane Adepts. It's not quite that extreme, but you can end up with more Crane Adepts and Tiger Adepts and things like that. And like the Ox Adepts are just worse Tiger Adepts. And
yeah,
it's a whole mess. It's the ability needs serious work. And I don't think the legendary can salvage it outside of doing something like you said, that's just obviously busted.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, agreed. But legendary wise, it seems like, I mean, none of them seem too out of control, right? In terms of like, maybe you equip one of them for a specific, you know, situation, but I think in general, they're just middle of the road legendaries, right? Versus something that you'll replace what you're already using today.
One thing I will say is that on two of the fights that we did testing on this week, actually three of the fights we did testing on this week, our strategy revolved heavily around having the entire raid stacked. Gotcha. So something like the Bone Dust Brewer Feinline Stomp Legendary, where you had on two of the fights, you had like very heavily telegraphed planned movement along with stacked raid would favor both the Night Fae and the Bone Dust Brew Legendaries. That is a situation where for Mistweaver, I could see one of them possibly being an option, but I don't know enough about the Mistweaver legendaries to know whether, even in the ideal situation, if they are able to take the top spot.
No, not based on the changes we got, that's for sure.
Okay. I will say one more thing before we move on to those changes. The double proc chance on the Night Fae one means that Brewmasters might end up dropping an ability from a rotation entirely. If you're playing Night Fae.
Interesting.
And it's still like, I meant to get Sims, like, Hina Lover implemented the legendaries. I haven't done any APL work yet. So I don't know for sure that this is going to happen. And it's also going to depend on how reliably you can actually stand in your Fae line, because, like, so you're not going to literally be able to remove a button from your bar, because if you have to move out, then you're going to need a different filler ability than Fae Line Stomp. But if you're able to reliably stand in your Fey line and like play around casting it after you move instead of before you move, then having Fey line stop might actually mean that like we no longer press Tiger Palm or no longer press Breath of Fire.
That's crazy.
So
that's crazy.
Yeah, that is interesting. And Sims in progress, we don't know yet how that's going to look, but it is on the horizon. And again, like, because of the APO work that still needs doing, any preliminary Sims that you see right now, take with a grain of salt.
Gotcha. Awesome. Yeah, the Mistweaver Sims. We'll do this. Yeah.
Brewmaster, though.
That's true. That's awesome, though. Maybe it works out. Maybe that'll be fun. Press a new ability.
I wouldn't mind being Night Fae again, although I do not want to finish the campaign again. I found out that I was not as far along in the Night Fae covenant as I had remembered when I moved my monk. I copied my monk over to PTR again. It's still Kyrian on live.
Yeah.
I switched it to Night Fae on PTR so I could test the legendary. And it's only renown 18.
That's not a lot of renown, Emelson. You need more of that.
I couldn't even run like Nia with Burrs on PTR, which was really annoying.
I can imagine. That's funny. Gotta work on that. All right then. I think that's legendaries, and now we get to move into Mistweaver changes. They actually made changes to Mistweaver.
Lots of changes.
It's a lot of words. It's not actually that many, but there are a couple of interesting ones. Go through, maybe what we do is I'll just read through them and sort of talk about, you know, what they potentially mean.
Yeah.
So the first one is sort of uninteresting, but good, is that they reduced the mana cost of Enveloping Mist. It went from, it's like a 7-ish%, reduction, goes from 6% base mana to 5.6%. Which is good, which is great. You love to see it. A good reduction. I think in general, people say that Mistweaver spells cost a lot of mana.
They do.
They also do a lot of healing in certain cases, but yeah, more reduction is always good, particularly for a spell we cast a lot more this expansion than we have in previous expansions. So
I remember when I was learning to play Mistweaver in BFA that like Enveloping Mist was almost never cast. And is that no longer the case?
Well, no, because it has the interaction with our Celestials, right? So you're going to cast it just based on, you know, wanting to proc Enveloping Breath whenever you have a Celestial up, and then that's really actually the only place you're going to cast it more. But for those every 3 minutes, for those...
I have only played Mistweaver on Kael'thas, and you cast it on Kael'thas for obvious reasons.
Yeah. I mean, you still cast it if somebody's taking a ton of single target damage, so it'll be still useful in, like, dungeons. And even on, like, I mean, I'd cast it on, well, if I did Sire, I'd probably cast on Sire in, like, phase 3 on some of the tanks and things like that, so... but yeah, definitely love mana reduction changes. Huge fan. So the other big thing, I know you're sharing the patch notes. We'll skip the next one. It's a little mastery change we'll get to at the end. Okay. But they did make an overall aura adjustment to Mistweaver. So they basically changed our, you know, damage modifiers to Rising Sun Kick, Blackout Kick, Tiger Palm, and Spinning Crane Kick. Basically adjusting our single target buttons. So Tiger Palm, Blackout Kick, and Rising Sun Kick. About 10% in terms of damage increases across those abilities, and then Spinning Crane Kick got about a 20% damage increase, I think, the way it masked out.
So that just seems pretty good.
Essentially damage increases across the board, which is awesome for a healer that they make us be in melee.
right
A healer that started out as a melee healer and then, you know, since the rework in Legion has had less of a melee focus on it, right? It's nice to see them increasing our damage, which essentially should start to force people into melee more often. We're already considered melee in fights like Sludge Fist. Awesome that we get a little bit more damage here. This is actually a direct buff also to Ancient Teachings of the Monastery, one of our legendaries. Okay. So
is
basically
that your current, like, BIS legendary?
It's also our current BIS legendary, yep. But it's a direct, again, 10% buff to that because you do 10% more damage. That legendary essentially, after you cast Essence Font, for 10 seconds, any damage you do with Rising Sun Kick, Tiger Palm, and Blackout Kick heals up to two party members around you.
For the amount
I think it's the amount they hit. Or there's some, I don't know the conversion off the top of my head, but for the amount of damage you've done, which is great. So it's those damage increases are just a direct buff to that legendary and to Mistweaver in general. So it is really good.
As a fun note, so I have a 99 parse for damage on Sun King. I did 1300 DPS on that, which is not holy paladin levels by any stretch of the imagination. But I was basically while we were not in shade phase, I was only healing, and then while we were in shade phase, I was only doing damage, like not even casting essence font.
Nice.
And so, only casting damaging spells, I was at 2200 DPS on live. So Mistweaver seems to be, I would say, it is in that spot that they like, where you can choose to commit GCDs to damage or to healing.
Mm-hmm.
But also, if you do commit GCDs to damage, the damage is pretty compelling.
And
this makes it more so, and will also do things like, while you have that that healing effect from doing damage, you're going to get not only more healing but more damage out of that as well. So that seems good.
Yeah, I mean to be fair, like if you take away paladins just being an outlier this patch, right? Mistweaver is like your second best damage healer, right? The problem with paladin is, you know, they free damage. I don't want to get into it, but they can do free damage. And not like their damage is essentially free that they provide, because it doesn't hurt their healing at all. And then you have Disc, who is primarily a damage, like their damage is converted into healing. They need to do damage to heal. So yeah, no, it's a great buff. Puts us, you know, probably puts us above Disc almost. I think, you know, the way the numbers lay out, you'll probably see us be just very competitive in that area. And yeah, it's a buff to HT to the monastery from a legendary perspective, which is good.
Nice.
Which makes it more efficient.
It seems even less unlikely that you all are going to use a Covenant legendary.
Right. I didn't want to like spoil it when we were talking about that, but that's the major reason, or one of the larger reasons you're not going to use the Covenant ones, is just because of this buff. So really good. And then the final change is Revival now procs. Well, so two changes to Revival. Their base spell power Revival was decreased by about 10%. So it's about 10% nerf to the base spell power. However, Revival now procs Gusts of Mist, our mastery. So I went back, you know, when they did the rework in Legion, and I read some old articles and some old sort of just, you know, forum posts and things like that. And people were like, man, Revival doesn't hit that hard. Maybe we should add mastery to it. So I'm wondering if Blizzard does actually read feedback. They're just like 4 years behind, 5 years behind. So they're catching up. Like, eventually they'll get to like feedback from like 3 years ago. They'll start implementing changes. But no, I digress. So this is a great change. So essentially, yeah, when you hit Revival, it procs mastery. Even though the base spell power has been reduced, even at zero mastery, your basic mastery, it's a buff to the spell.
That's interesting, actually. So like, even so, for those that maybe aren't aware, when you unlock mastery for your spec, you have a base amount even with zero mastery on your gear. Mm-hmm. So brewmasters have 8% mastery, for example, baseline, with no mastery on your gear. It is interesting that they did tune this such that it is still a buff to Revival, even if you have zero mastery on all of your gear.
Yeah. Yeah, which is, I mean, and it interacts with all of the same spells and ways that mastery interacts today. So it'll double hit if you have essence hots on folks. It'll interact with Bone Dust Brew. I forget the Jade Bond CDR is the one thing I haven't been able to test, or I haven't seen testing of. If that sort of is one instance or if it's multiple. So it's really a great change in terms of just what it does to Revival. Revival is literally now goes back to pre-Legion raid lay on hands, essentially. If you can
really,
like, there's a link clip around from Swaggles where he gets a really good Bone Dust Brew on most of the raid on the testing this week, and then hits Revival, and literally there are multiple people that go from like 15-20% health to just full, like, oh, just absolutely God. Ridiculous. So
if in you terms of its ability. If you saw Max talking about the Mistweaver changes on stream,
I didn't, unfortunately, but
he said that Revival basically needed to be a raid lay on hands in order to be compelling.
Yeah.
So it sounds like there's a little bit of setup. Like, you have to get that good Bone Dust Brew. You have to get, you know, Gust of Mist on the raid. Mm-hmm. But Seems good.
Yeah, and with the raid being, you know, grouped up a little bit for some fights, and I mean Essence Font works on it too, so you could even pre-Essence Font, which is something we generally don't do in raids, but you could if you needed to get sort of the double hits out. I mean, it'll be interesting. I think, you know, Lincoln's asking, does this bring Mistweavers off the bench? I think in terms of like the world first race, it's so hard to say because at that level you're looking at, like, I think there's just like the ability for paladins to, you know, either negate mechanics or just be very strong. I mean, shamans still have spirit link, right? I think it sort of doesn't change really that part of the meta. But I think for like your mid-tier guilds, when you have the ability to survive the hits from a raid perspective, Mistweaver just gets stronger there.
Yeah.
So
I think that's really the heart of it. Like for world first, world top 50 kind of guilds that are killing it 10 eye levels below the rest of the community, the ability to survive the mechanic is actually the hard part. They're not dying to damage that happens after the big raid hit. They are dying to the big raid hit.
Right.
So damage reduction cooldowns are extra important for them. For the rest of the world, having a raid-wide lay on hands is actually perhaps better than a 20% damage reduction if you can survive the initial hit.
Right.
And that's really, really the kind of crux of the issue. And I mean, the same thing can be said where like they massively buffed Life Cocoon in patch 8.3. And that took Life Cocoon from being like something that I, as a tank, like never called for at all. It was still bad.
Yeah.
To being like one of those things where it was often actually better for me to call for a Life Cocoon than to call for a sack. Because the 20% damage reduction, you know, it was good. But when Life Cocoon is like covering my entire health bar, it's a lot safer.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's the whole, like the revival one's awesome. The additional damage rate is great too. The interesting thing or the cool thing about this, I think, is that, I mean, I wonder if Blizzard's going to start to play more into the melee style for Mystery. So sort of thinking about like where their heads are at and where they're going. It's nice that they're buffing our damage, and it'd be nice if they start to allow us to do more healing that doesn't require us to cast. Right. So if you think about like the way I was actually thinking about this today as I was doing something, I didn't have a really good funny thing to say there. So we're just going to move on. But I was thinking about it this around where like Mistweavers are very agile melee healers, where if they want to keep Paladin as a melee healer, that's fine. But Paladins have, like, from a thematic perspective, like they're bulky, they're big, like they're just heavy characters, right?
In terms slow of- and sturdy.
Exactly. So the idea is like, why is it that paladins are the agile, never cast melee healer, right? And can just swing a hammer and just cast, you know, just heal without ever, you know, stopping to cast. And monk is the one that has the cast time, right? Like, it'd be interesting to see if they start to shift that, where like you start to see like paladins start incorporating more casting into their play style, and monk just gets less, right? And sort of, I don't know. Hopefully this is sort of the start of them saying like, look, like, don't split monk in two, like make them a melee healer, you know, buff and push things to that.
In theory, paladin is split in two. In theory, you can still do the caster playstyle with paladin. In practice, it's bad and you shouldn't.
Well, I mean, the problem is you can't, right? So like the thing that I always talk about is that it's where, like, if you are targeted by a raid mechanic,
that's true.
Where do you fit? Like, what group do you fit in? Do you get hit by raid, like range mechanics, you get hit by melee ones, right? And generally Blizzard has been very good about saying like, if you're an X class, you're supposed to be here in terms of your ranged and melee split, right? And
so Holy Paladin gets hit by melee mechanics. So yeah. That means that you need to be in melee so that you can handle them appropriate much of the time. The exception being the odd melee mechanic that requires you to just run out. And in that case, being melee at range is beneficial, but...
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. So, I mean, it's... I think in general, the changes are good. Just getting any changes at this point is interesting. These are, I mean, fairly substantial, I'd say. Like, the revival one is honestly massive in terms of just making revival now something that can prop up a raid on its own. So for, like, I mean, just thinking about current fights, like I haven't done much of the new fights, right? But things of like current fights, like even like on council, like clearing the fevers, right? Being able to like have your raid maybe bounce like the first two stacks off them, you revival, they're full, they bounce the last one. And even if you don't have a reduction at that point, you're probably pretty safe, right?
The one fight I would say there are probably two fights where like even in, you know, I'm I level 229 or something now. Mm-hmm. Even with that level of gear, it's not safe to not have a damage reduction are Sludge Fist and Stone Legion Generals. Both have places where like having a Spirit Link Totem or a damage reduction is just so much better. Still, even at the level of gear that we have. So Sludge Fist, we can survive without the damage reduction. You have people like press health stones or whatever to top themselves off. You will still occasionally lose people that are just like too low from a chain slam dot or something like that if you don't also have a damage reduction for the pillar breaks. But at the same time, like if you have the whole raid like reasonably topped up before pillar break and they use a personal, if revival can then just erase all of the damage from the pillar break.
Yeah,
that is kind of compelling because I would definitely like put on the note like personals before the hit, you know, personals and health stones before the hit. And if we can just have that one revival that just undoes all of it, like those, the Sludge Fist, as an example, doesn't have a whole lot of other things that you need a personal defensive for.
Right. Yeah. So, it'll be interesting to see how the new fights play into it. Because again, most ability usage is like the most like raid cooldowns in general depend on the fight, right? Yeah. So like it's the reason like on Hungering Shamans are so good because you basically negate like the miasmas during the consume, right? Like that doesn't.
Stone Legion Generals has the healing reduction where Spirit Link Totem is just again really really good.
Yeah, so I think it'll depend on how Sanctum fights lay out, but I mean revival. It's just a direct buff to Mistweaver. It's not crazy in terms of putting us in the hey we're overpowered and ridiculous levels. But it's good, and the damage, you know, damage increase is always cool. I'm always good with, and then revival interact with mastery, which is like now probably the most impactful skill we've gotten a mastery interaction with since the rework, if I can say that, because like the only one since then has been like Soothing Mist got a mastery introduction or interaction after that rework, and then Expel Harm has one, but like you don't care about those two spells at all, right? So. Yeah. Overall, I'm really excited about the changes. And to be fair, I think I'm more the direction, hopefully, that Blizzard's going to do this, take the class, right, and sort of lean more into the melee style and then get rid of the ability to stand at range and cast because it's boring and dumb. I'll be completely honest with you. So,
if you want to stand at range and cast, you should play a Holy Priest.
Yeah, you can play. You have Holy Priest, you have Shaman, you have Disc, you have... Druids, I don't know what druids do, but maybe they cast.
Druids do whatever the fuck they want.
Yeah, well, that's because they're outside the raid, right?
that's a great coming from a Mistweaver.
Oh, it's true. I was in the raid this week. Mistweaver change is awesome. I think these are the only monk changes this week. Well, other than the legendaries, right? It's only monk changes, so. We don't have anything else to talk about, but Mistweavers are cool. Everyone should play them. And the changes look like they're a lot of fun. So,
I mean, hearing even just the potential for the raid lay on hands from revival, even if it requires setup and a little bit of luck, you know, getting something that's 80% of that, you know, is enough that I personally am doing a double take and going, well, okay. We should probably try and get Abe or you or someone into our mythic testing for the next couple of weeks and see how revival actually does.
Yeah.
I don't know that we would actually like recruit a Mistweaver, but we do have people that on the raid team that are, you know, former Mistweavers now playing other things.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. If I can swing it, I'll definitely try and join some testing, but it'll be cool to see how this sort of plays out in the next couple testings and how it plays out at the start of 9-1. So I'm really thinking about, I think it makes my case for getting rid of my dumb Holy Paladin a little bit easier now that we got some buffs. So we'll see if there's anything else coming in. So,
And again, like this is from my perspective, I am like a world 500 raider. So we killed Denathrius at like eye level 224 or something, compared to like the first 10 kills that are like eye level 215, if that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
Actually, 10 eye levels makes a big difference for being able to survive mechanics.
Right. Yeah. Which is like the big thing. So,
all right. Lincoln is correct. Limit was 221. So Denathrius is maybe a bad example because they had a full reset of extra gear. Sledgefist is probably a better example because they hadn't gotten the full extra reset of gear from Mythic yet. And would have been slightly lower eye level because we were also like eye level 224 when we killed Sledgefist. So, but my point stands. With the extra gear that we're going to have and the extra things like the deepening bond from Soulbinds or from Renown, increasing your stamina, it's potentially interesting.
Yeah, it'll be cool to see how it gets used. But yeah, I don't think it changes up the meta. Paladins still do too much damage. Disc is disc, and Shaman has Spirit Link, so those things don't change. Mistweaver is considered bad because Limit didn't use one, or Echo didn't use one, so stupid. all right, so maybe we shift gears slightly here towards the end. So I don't know if you had any other comments on sort of the changes or any legendary stuff, but I did want to ask a couple of questions or just see how raid testing went for you this week. So
yeah, so raid testing went well. So we tested 4 mythic bosses this week. The 9, which is like the third boss in the instance. Mm-hmm. Soul Render, what's his name, which is the garage boss. We tested Guardian of the First Ones, which is one of the very earliest heroic bosses they tested, and received some pretty substantial changes. Right. And then Remnant of Ner'zhul, which also got some pretty substantial changes, and is a much improved fight as a result. And I don't have a lot of comments on like the first two. I think they're good fights. I've really enjoyed Soul Render. The 9 has potential to be kind of annoying, but it's the third boss. It's not super complex, and it's fine.
Gotcha.
But Ner'zhul is one that I do want to talk a little bit about because they made some pretty dramatic changes to that fight. I was really not a fan of the heroic version of that fight, as I said on the podcast. Yeah. We talked about it. After the changes that it got and like the mythic version of it is like great. I love that fight now. It is very good.
Wow.
So basically there's two main changes I would say that they made. Mm-hmm. First off, the tank combo is now a one part instead of a two part thing. So the two part thing previously, it could get interrupted by other mechanics happening. And so you could just lose a cast of the tank mechanic, which you need in order to kill adds that spawn.
Yep.
So removing the potential for that to happen makes the fight much less frustrating. It also makes it easier to avoid overlaps with knockbacks that are going on. The second change that they made is there's this spell, Malevolence, that gets put on people that you have to dispel. They reduced the number of dispels. On Heroic, we didn't even have 20 people, and we were getting 3 dispels. On Mythic, we were getting 2 dispels. So either it's just like a Mythic thing where, like, I guess it's also worth noting, the knockback from it is much bigger on Mythic than it was on Heroic testing. So it could be part of that. It's much improved. So the thing that really I enjoyed about this fight is it's, and this is going to sound really weird, it's got a very Kill Jaden element to it. And people hated Kill Jaden. So like, what's good about this? Well, it's the fun little bit where you all stack up, you dispel one, and you get knocked to the other end of the platform. You stack back up and you do it again and you get knocked back to where you started. So because you don't have to do all the gateway roar, whatever nonsense, rocket jump nonsense to get into position for these, like it's much more forgiving than Kill Jaden, but it still has that fun element of like getting bounced around the room.
Gotcha.
And then that also, you have enough time where there's this interesting complexity of trying to dispel at good time so it doesn't happen during another mechanic. So it's like, The duration of the spell is long enough that you can play around the other mechanics that are happening and not feel like you got totally screwed by an overlap.
Gotcha.
So that's a really interesting element of the fight where, because it is forgiving enough that it's fun, but still like challenging, you got to pay attention to your timers and what's coming in next and what's the boss energy at. So that you don't have a dispel go off at a bad time.
That's nice. Yeah, and I noticed too. I know too that Abbe was saying that revival does not dispel.
Yes,
the mechanic.
So on heroic testing, it did, and it would wipe you. Yeah. And on mythic testing, they had changed it, so revival does not dispel that.
Which is awesome that we've added another thing. Revival can't dispel, even though one of the main things about revival is that it does
dispel. It dispels. It's very funny because if you look back at like classic raids, there's a lot of like just dispel this dot, you know, dispel this poison, dispel this disease, and that's like part of the fight is healers dispelling things.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of that anymore. Even things like on Stone Legion Generals, dispelling all four heart runs at the same time is very bad unless you have a cooldown to go with it so that you can keep all four people that you dispel alive.
So, yeah. I'm trying to remember the last time that it was potentially relevant was what was the second last boss in EP?
Zekul.
Like I know we used revival on a specific dispel there because we could basically dispel all four right away and then have another cooldown. Literally, it wasn't for the healing, it was just so I could dispel quickly.
Yeah.
Because we had to dispel and then move or something.
It's like a timing issue. You couldn't easily mass dispel them.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was like the last time I think it was irrelevant. And then, of course, Botanist in phase 3 in Nighthold, where you couldn't revival at all because it dispelled the tank and then everyone died.
Yeah.
So I definitely did that like two or three times. I did it once when we were progressing, and I remember I did it once. So my raid leader was so angry. I feel like I had taken a break for like a week or two and came back and hit it in phase 3 and killed everybody. And he was like, what the fuck? I'm like, I forgot. Like, it's, I'm trying to get back into it.
So I will mention that there's one other thing about Ner'Zhul I want to mention, and that is it lost one kind of push timer bullshit and it gained another one. So now he's casting Shatter, his timers on his other abilities stop. They're paused during it like they are during the Dance and Council of Blood. Mm-hmm. But his energy gain, which is what triggers the tank mechanic, does not stop. So that ends up getting desynced from other things, depending on when you cause Shatter, because Shatter depends on his HP. It's 80%, 60%, and 30%.
Gotcha.
So it's very, that needs to be fixed. Like, basically his energy gain needs to pause while he's shattering, or his timers need to not pause while he's shattering. One of the two. I think the former, having his energy gain pause, is better because it means that you can't have situations where he queues up like three abilities and casts them in a random order.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, it sucks that we have these sort of bosses with like these bullshit timer things. I think it's so annoying. Like, we talk about this. It's just so annoying.
In this case, it doesn't seem like it's going to be, it's not like Zekul levels of bullshit or Stone Legion General's levels of bullshit. It's just annoying. Like,
gotcha.
It's like you have to watch his energy because that means that you can have the tank mechanic go off. Like, you can end up in the situation where you have like Grasp of Malice, which is a knockback, and you generally don't want to dispel during it. And into the tank mechanic into like another mechanic that you can't dispel during. So you can end up with like 15 seconds of just you can't dispel here. And that really makes things hard. And feels kind of bullshit, honestly. But because if you do dispel during the tank mechanic, what happens is, for one thing, it's going to hit your co-tank more than likely. And it's also going to hit a bunch of the raid, and it does quite a bit of damage. So it's really no bueno.
Gotcha.
And then I want to briefly touch on Guardian of the First Ones. So the change on this one is, this is the energy cores boss, right? So on heroic, you just like drag it into the energy core to recharge it. No problem.
Yeah.
On this, on mythic, you have to drop, like, you put circles on people. You got to go and put them on the energy core to charge it up before you can use it to recharge the boss.
Gotcha.
Except it's extremely, extremely punishing. Like, there's a whole bunch of tuning things with this fight. Like, the health pool on it is like ridiculous on mythic testing, which, again, a lot of the times on mythic testing, they do bump up the health pool so that people can see all the mechanics and don't just like DPS through it.
Yeah.
So that's like whatever. But this is something that is extremely punishing, because if you miss one of those circles on the energy core, it's almost just a wipe. Because you basically have to drag him into an energy core based on when his energy hits zero. If you have less energy in the energy core, That means that the next time he's draining energy, you have less time.
Less, so it's like a compounding, yeah.
Fewer circles. Fewer circles means the next core has less energy. And that, not only that, it means that the next big raid damage events are going to come more quickly, mm-hmm. which means that all of your healer CDs are going to be off. So basically what it means is if you ever miss with threat assessment is what it's called. If you ever miss giving energy to the energy core with threat assessment, it's almost just a wipe.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah, it's almost like a compounding. Like, and do you think they did that maybe as like the soft enrage, right? Because, or is there still an enrage
even
if you extended?
It still does the thing where like when he hits zero energy, he does a big cast. That actually got, so I don't know if it's clarifying text or if this was not the case on Heroic, but the sentries that he spawns to shoot at people, for one thing, are way less rippy than they were on Heroic. That's,
yeah, I remember you talking about that, yeah.
They were way less rippy. We didn't have any issues with it. But then they also are destroyed when he casts Purging Protocol, which is what he does when he hits zero energy.
Gotcha.
So like, you use Purging Protocol to kill the sentries, and then you drag him into the energy core. You can leave him out. Like, there is some flexibility. If you have good healing setup, you can have him do multiple casts of Purging Protocol. Each one does more damage than the last. So it's like ramping damage. You can't do that forever because you will die, even through like, a healing totem. But you can potentially deal with multiple casts of that early in progression in order to extend the enrage timer.
Gotcha.
But I mean, that is what the enrage timer is. Like when he hits zero, when there's no more energy cores, like that's it. You have until Purging Protocol kills you to kill
right.
Him. It's kind of okay. Like Tetris when you run out of pillars.
Yeah.
So the one thing I would say really needs to change about this boss is the threat assessment needs to be more forgiving. Because having like one, and the other thing too is these circles had to overlap with exactly the center of the energy core model. Like if you hit the edge of it, it didn't count. And that's so like there's two things I would say need to change. One, that overlap has to be more forgiving. Like you have to be able to hit not necessarily the center of it, but just like hit the edge of it, expand that just a little bit so that it is more forgiving. Because otherwise it's just frustrating. And two, you need to be able to miss a threat assessment at some point and still kill the boss.
At least one. Yeah. Like
if, for example, threat assessment goes out and then one of your threat assessment targets gets hit by something and dies, you wipe.
Yeah.
That's it. Doesn't matter when it happens almost. You just wipe. Gotcha. Because it's at least like 5 seconds off of the enrage timer. If it happens on the first or second pillar, it's going to be way more than 5 seconds off the enrage timer.
Because every pillar after that's shorter, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's that's something that needs to be changed. So like the threat assessments need to give like more energy to it. So you have like everything has an energy cap of 60 instead of 100. So in theory, you can give an energy core the full 60 if you hit it with all three of every set of threat assessments.
Gotcha.
That happen per like round.
Mm-hmm.
So it needs to be like they need to give like slightly more energy so that you can, you know, if you miss like one per pillar, you don't immediately just wipe the raid.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, it'd be interesting to see if they modify, because maybe their idea, maybe it's more that they need to modify how to do the overlap right versus the amount of energy it gives, or like from a mythic perspective, maybe the idea is you don't miss, right? Like you have to get them to hit and then.
And I would say if that is their goal, it needs to be like, because we had positioning set up to make it possible to almost always get it. And the big thing that got us is just people not overlapping with the exact center of the pillar. And if they fix that, then it becomes a lot less frustrating, I would say. Mm-hmm. And it's probably, it wouldn't be my preference, but it's definitely doable to like never miss a threat assessment. It just requires very tight positioning and very good play, which sounds like mythic to me. I would say it's like a little bit of like tuning the fun out of it if you can never miss any at all.
Gotcha.
But there's not really a good way for them to be like, okay, well, over the course of the entire fight, you can miss like one, right?
Yeah.
In the way like Sludge Fist, over the course of the fight, you can have like one death because then you get your one B-res that you can get that person back up. It's
like similar, That's fair. That's fair. Well, cool. Anything else from raid testing?
Not really. The other two bosses were pretty much as expected. Blood Decay is very good on Soul Render. Blood Decay stonks Rising. Also with the AMZ nerf, AMZ is much better on Blood than it is on on Norway by a lot. Nice. So that's something. But yeah, I like the other two bosses. So
awesome. All right. Well, I think then let us move on to sort of our final two sections of the podcast. Since we are under new timing restrictions, so we can't. We got to end. So yeah. So next up is, of course, Lore Corner. It's something that I made up. I don't know if Emelson even likes it, but it's where I basically bring to you guys fun lore facts that I've learned from World of Warcraft, because I've never actually read the lore other than what happened in Warcraft 3. So I don't know what happened before Warcraft 3 or after it, just that's the extent of my knowledge. So, which is actually going to be pretty funny because I think this actually happened in War 3. I didn't realize it. So there is a interesting lore interaction with the Nine. So one of the boss fights, I think we talked about today. But basically the Nine is, of course, where you fight Sylvanas's Valkyr.
Right.
So fun fact about me, I only thought there was one Valkyr, not nine. So we're learning things right off the bat. So yeah, there is, of course, nine Valkyr. Basically, again, what I learned is that every time Sylvanas has died, one of the Valkyr, or not every time Sylvanas has died, there's been some other areas where she has not died, but a Valkyr has sacrificed themselves. But anytime we want to bring somebody back from the dead, a Valkyr sacrifices themselves to allow Sylvanas or potentially someone else to survive and live on. So the nine is basically that fight where you fight the nine Valkyrie. There are apparently only three Valkyrie left alive. So those are sort of the main bosses of that fight. And then there is six that sort of are like, there's an ability basically named after the other six that happened during the fight, which I thought was really cool in terms of like the lore. So again, not realizing that there were multiple Valkyrie, sort of was interesting to me. And then the other part about the lore is that I feel like they retcon this in, but the fact that the reason Sylvanas can resurrect herself is because of the pact she made with the Jailer. So sort of tied in her being able to start to resurrect herself and be able to utilize the Valkyrie, right, to perform those sort of dark magic things that she's done based on her pact with the Jailer, you know, so many years ago. I think it started back in was it the start of WoD, I believe, or no?
It's the end of Wrath of the Lich King when she jumps off of ICC after helping kill Arthas.
She jumped off the top. I didn't read this part.
Oh yeah, so this was a short story that got posted on.
Oh, I did read the story. Oh yeah, sorry.
Yeah. So that short story, she jumps off the edge and gets resurrected by. This is something that is left out of that short story is what exactly happened and why she got resurrected. But what is in there is the nine Valkyrie and that she got resurrected.
Yeah.
And if you've done the Silver Pine Forest, I think it's Silver Pine. Yeah, the Silver Pine Forest quests in Cataclysm, the Valkyrie do show up there because she uses them to reanimate a bunch of undead in her service, basically.
Yep. And Garrosh gets very upset with her. Yes. Remember that quest.
Yes.
But yeah, so I thought it was interesting that they sort of incorporated the lore of like her and sort of the quote unquote fall. I think they call them fallen compatriots in the fight itself. But those compatriots all have abilities named after, you know, the six Valkyrie that have sort of given, I guess, their lives in support of, you know, right, keeping Sylvanas alive.
And I guess small spoilers for the fight if you haven't seen it yet. The way it works is that there are three like Valkyrie that you actually fight during the boss fight, and then the other six all have abilities that they do as like spectral Valkyrie, basically.
Mm-hmm.
that come down and cast those abilities. So and then on Mythic, the Mythic mechanic is that basically it goes in two phases on every difficulty where you kill two of them and then the third one comes down. And on Mythic, while you're fighting that third one, the spirits of the first two also do abilities. So
I realize that. That's super cool.
It's actually very, very, like, to borrow a term from the Magic the Gathering kind of community, it's very Vorthos-y. Like, the mechanics intersect with the story in very clean ways. It's very cool.
Yeah. This is one of the, I think, one of the first fights that, like, yeah, that I sort of paid attention to in terms of, like, the overlap and how, like, yeah, the ability sort of went with the story. So, yeah, I mean, I learned, I guess, Is the Valkyr thing like really well known? Like, did people know there was multiple of them that kept her alive? Am I just an idiot?
It's one of those things where, like, I think if you paid attention, it was like not a secret, but it's also one of those things that's like barely come up since Wrath of the Lich King.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's like not, I would say probably not super well known in this day and age.
Gotcha.
But it's one of those things where if you did read the short stories and you did read the quest text, you probably would have picked it up. But knowing you, I don't think you were reading.
I did read the short story. Well, I skimmed it. I'll be honest. But yeah, when I found out about all this, I was like, man, I should really figure out how Sylvanas got these 9 people, because I only thought there was 1. But yeah, no, this was it was cool. This was sort of the big lore corner thing for me this week. Was actually, to be fair, this was like the lore corner thing from 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, and it kept getting pushed out because we kept having half-hour episodes.
Exactly. So yeah, so
I do have one more thing I actually want to say about that. I think it is super cool that the way that they addressed like the fact that we can't kill Sylvanas until all of her Valkyrie are defeated by having us as an encounter kill the last 3 Valkyrie. I just think that's really cool.
Yeah. That and now we basically pave the way for when we actually kill her.
Right. It's kind of
not
like,
actually happening, Emelton. She is getting redeemed. We've talked about this. Although Morgan Day did say corpse. He did say corpse and then change it to corpse in quotation
marks. So by the same token, like every undead character is already a corpse. So
that's true. I think
they haven't decided what's going to happen with her yet, to be totally honest. And it's going to depend on fan reactions. I hope we
kill her, man. Don't want another one. So in any event, that's the lore corner. And so next up is normally Q&A. However, I'll be honest with you, Emerson. I forgot about the time change we were doing. And I'm so thrown off that I never asked for questions from the community.
We did get questions during the stream that we have addressed. So we kind of did Q&A throughout the episode.
We did. We talked a little bit about, is Mistweaver meta now? No. We talked to some other interesting things that I can't remember because I have the mind of... Oh, what does my friend say? I have the mind of a goldfish. or mind like a goldfish or memory like a goldfish. There's apparently a saying like that involves goldfish and thoughts. As you can see, I'm really good at remembering things. But yeah, I don't remember them. But yeah, so maybe next week I will be ready with actual questions so that we can actually have a better Q&A section than this one.
Speaking of, though, if you do have questions for the podcast, I think we are going to go ahead and wrap the show up now because we are running up against our time limit, because I talked more than I had planned to about the raid testing.
Good.
But we're going to wrap the show up now. But if you do have questions for next week's episode, please reach out to myself or Anomaly in the Peak of Serenity Discord or on Twitter or here in Twitch chat, and we will get those answered in next week's show. So until then, I hope you all enjoyed this week's episode of the Peak of Serenity podcast. As always, if you did enjoy it and you want to support it and the other work that we do, including theory work and sims and guide writing over at the Peak of Serenity, you can do that over at our Patreon at patreon.com/Peak of Serenity. And of course, if you don't want to or are unable to contribute financially, you are more than welcome and even encouraged to come and hang out in the lounge channels in the Discord. They are always a good time. Although I think Brew Lounge is probably going to need to get renamed to F1 Lounge because that's all they've been talking about.
Monaco was today. We didn't even get to talk about Monaco. Max won. Super excited. Sorry.
I got very confused because they were talking about Max and I was like, what is Limit GM doing now? What? This doesn't make any sense.
Verstappen, man. He won. Love it.
But that is going to be our show today. Thank you all for coming and watching, and we will see you next week.
See ya.
Bye.